Sometimes it's not the number, but it's the quality. The kinds of connections I make with hosts, guests, and hosts are very special because of that intimacy. So it doesn't have to be tens of thousands of downloads to have a meaningful connection with someone through a recorded conversation.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
And welcome back to the Podcast on Podcasting. I'm your host, Adam, AAA Adams. I'm stoked to have Craig James, and I'm already learning a lot from you, Craig. And it's been a few seconds. Well, that's pretty legit, right?
Oh boy, now we've teed up a big expectation, Adam. Watch out.
So a little bit about what I want to talk about is you've got the podcast, Big Audacious Idea. And my company, we actually implement the BHAGs, which is very similar. The Big Hairy Audacious Goal, or whatever they call them.
That's Jim Collins with the best of them. Going back to the 90s, I'm dating myself, but BHAGs, Big Hairy Audacious Goals. Thanks to Jim Collins. Right on.
Love it. And so the name of the podcast is Big Audacious Idea. And you can find that wherever you're listening to this podcast. So that's pretty easy. And man, your bio is long and there's a lot to it. I will say that I was just out in Northeast Ohio. We should have shaken hands while I was there. But for the listener, Craig James wears lots of hats. He's that guy wearing many, many hats. I'll share with you. He's a speaker. He's a strategist. He's a CEO, a C blah, 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 blah. And he owns all these different companies. He started Catalyst Strategies or Cat Strat. You can go to cat-strat.com for more information on that. Yep. And I guess you're starting another podcast coming up. Is it possible? That's going to be interesting. You sit on some boards and you also, I'm trying to remember if I have it right, but you are the publisher or the lead publisher for your podcast as well. What does that mean?
So Big Audacious Idea was just that, an idea a few years back. And it happened to be born right at the time that a good friend was quasi-launching. Actually, there was an entity that existed, but he became CEO. And that network called the Front Porch Network was just getting into a new phase of its future and a new brand called Evergreen Podcasts. So when we were both starting something, we said, let's do it together. So I'm proud to say that Big Audacious Idea was practically actually the first show under Evergreen. And so with that, host and co-executive producer. And
co-executive producer. That's right what on. I missed. That's right what on. I missed. Well, it's good to have you. And what glad we're going to be discussing today on the show is just general podcast ideas, where you think podcasting is going, pros and cons, how to start one. I think this is going to be a super valuable podcast. And we'll probably go into a couple of rabbit holes, I think. And I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable. Are you comfortable with
here.
That?
All good perfect. Here. Let's have so, it go where it goes.
Let's just talk a little bit about what you think the future of podcasting is, who's going to be listening, where it's going to be listened to, et cetera.
So what's interesting about podcasting is everyone thinks, gosh, there are so many podcasts out there that it's saturated. However, if we look a little bit closer, it's actually in its early, early phases. So one of the things to note about podcasting is to perhaps unthink the myth that it's saturated, I shouldn't get into it. It's just the beginning. And there's a lot that's happened in the recent year, of course, as we look back at, and I'm going to start thinking past pandemic as soon as I can, we have learned and need to learn how to connect and share, and through technology, even post-pandemic, continue the oral tradition of humans connecting and learning. And so the future, I think, is very bright for podcasting, and in many ways, it's just a beginning. I also think that I would argue that anyone feels hesitant to get into it, don't feel hesitant. Start. There's always more to it than meets the eye. It's not as easy as it might look, but it's getting a lot easier. So, you know, you think about, there have been about 80 billion humans in the course of human history, last 100,000 years, let's say. And there's a little less than 8 billion on the planet right now. We're in a moment in history like never before. I mean, if we wanted to not too long ago, we couldn't do this. So the opportunity is bright. And I think if anyone wants to share their voice, now's the time to do it.
I agree with you 100%. A lot of people have come to me and they say, Adam, should I really start a podcast? Because, I mean, there it's just completely saturated. And that is something that I really believe is a myth. For one example, a lot of podcasts, they try to get started. They don't make it past 7 episodes. And they're pulling down the algorithm, apparently, because of all these podcasts that really never made it off the ground. And there's a lot of them. And there's ways to be able to solve that for yourself when you're doing your own podcast. But additionally, with, I think it's 40 million YouTube channels. And with podcasts, there's 1.9 million. I mean, there's more than 20 times the YouTube channels. And what do you think of the difference, Craig, between podcast listeners and YouTube watchers? I think there's a clear distinction for most of us who are thinking about starting a podcast that we neglect to notice who's listening and who's watching.
Interesting question. I think that, first of all, let's talk about the environment. Not only the critical mass of video, but the competition for attention. So there's a ton of competing offerings for our eyes, fewer for our ears. And so in many ways, even if it feels like podcasting is very ubiquitous, it's still very niche. And what's a little different, let's say, to answer your question directly about the consumer of video, let's say through YouTube or audio through a podcast, surprisingly, is intimacy. So you think that because you see and you hear through a video, for example, it's a more rich experience. Sometimes moreness is lessness. And when listening into a podcast, either a monologue or an interview, there's like you're in a virtual room together. And that intimacy is very special. I also think, and resist going into kind of any judgment of intelligence or anything of that sort, but I think there's a nature to podcasting that's on demand. It's on pull basis. It can be pushed to you, of course, through social. But when I listen to an episode of a podcast, I am wanting to listen to it versus it sort of came at me. And so when you have an intention to engage and listen, that's a whole different experience.
I agree. I've noticed one thing with podcasts versus YouTube. When I choose to listen to podcasts, I'm usually subscribed to a handful of them. Not a lot of them, but I'm subscribed to a handful of them. And I don't listen to a podcast if I'm not subscribed to it. So it kind of pulls out a little bit of the noise in a way. And there has been studies that say that the podcast listener has a higher net worth than the YouTube watcher, which is part of what I was going for or what I was thinking. I liked how you said, you know, it's not about the intelligence and we won't really go there, but definitely the net worth of the podcast listener is generally higher. And for the most part, it helps them to be able to jump into a podcast, like you said, on demand. And they're not going to get a whole bunch of ads that don't have something to do with the podcast that they're listening to. So they might download your podcast and mine, but they're not listening to a whole bunch of others. They're not getting distracted. And generally, for me personally, this is where I was starting when I was going with that, is the podcast that I listen to. I know the person's name. I know where they're from. I know what they're about. I know where they live. But I watch a lot of YouTube at night when I'm bored and looking up different things. I don't know the name of the YouTube. I don't know the person's name. I don't think about it. It's not important to me. I'm not trying to buy anything from them. But with the podcast, it's more like, this is my guy or this is my gal. This is what I want to listen to. I did this intentionally. I did this on purpose. And if I'm going to hire somebody, I want to hire the host of this show because I believe in them. I trust them. So anyway,
there is an implicit relationship. It's not only intention, but again, I think the term intimacy, there's just something about it. And maybe I'm going off track from where you might go next, but one of the things as a, let's say, an aspiring podcaster, quite often, obviously, we think about the audience, who's the customer, and we should be focused there. Absolutely. But one of the joys I've experienced in the last few years being a podcaster is the sense of satisfaction it brings to me. You know, there's just no doubt about it. There's a selfish part of it. It harkens back to when I was a kid. We were talking earlier and set up here about, you know, what were the things that drove us when we were younger? You know, you're a compulsive connector and like being with people. I, too, like to have conversations with people. I also have a latent geekiness in me. So there's something about what I miss in, you know, the days of hi-fi, I'm dating myself, when you had flashing lights and vacuum tubes and a bunch of cables to worry about. And then the iPod and the iPhone's terrific, but I miss some of the stuff. And so you go into the sound booth and it's just like your own little zone. And it's a great creative outlet.
So speaking of the satisfaction that you have as a podcaster, I'm sure we can dive a little bit deeper in there. Like, what is it about podcasting that gives you that feeling?
So there's a couple things. Most of my episodes are dialogues, interviews like this. So there's the relationship part, as you just described. There's an intimacy with another person. There's also a certain intimacy with yourself. That might sound a little weird, but there's something about like what we're doing right now, the monitor right to your ears. One of the aspects for me, about 30 years ago, one of my ears broke, poop, gone one morning. Still got some left, but what's left is bad sound. So I've got a tonal loss in my left ear, a tone, that is, a quality of sound. If you make it louder, it's just bad sound louder. And so my relationship with my own voice, my relationship with my hearing is extra special to me. I think I appreciate it even more than before my ear broke. So one of the satisfying elements, Adam, is being with yourself in a very intimate way, not only with someone else, but with yourself. And I'm going to call it the transference of time. So in season 2-3 of Big Audacious Idea, we recorded 17 episodes, put them in the can. So recruit, script, record was like from July to mid-September. Edit was September through mid-November, distribution mid-November, and it'll continue through mid-March 2021. There's something about a nine-month continuum of relationship with a conversation, hearing yourself, hearing the guest, listening, editing. Then you listen again to do show notes. And what you find, and here's the satisfaction part, is I can listen to an interview 10 times over. And the 10th time, I'm still hearing something new. And either in myself or the guest, usually in the guest. That is very satisfying and powerful. And it's a lesson. When we think we hear, when we think we listen, when we think we understand, surprise, we might not. So it's a chance to relive and re-listen and relearn and gain new perspectives with the very same episode. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, that's interesting. Some of the things that I've noticed is my business grows when I have a podcast, not just because of the listener. And this could take into account that I wouldn't even have a single listener and I would still get a lot of benefit from having a podcast. And there's two reasons why. Number one is the credibility that you can build automatically in a new conversation with a potential client where they say, oh, you have the podcast on that topic. And right. It is instant. Additionally, by working on having these interviews on your show or other people's shows, a couple other things happen that I've noticed is because I have a podcast, regardless, this podcast, as we're recording it, the truth for the listener right now is I don't have any listeners when we're recording it because we haven't even published it yet. And right. So right now it's just a big audacious idea. That's it. And so we've got this podcast, got this episode we're recording, and we understand that down the road, I'm going to have these listeners, but the most important piece is that you and I are connecting. And so we'll connect regardless of a listener. So that's the second part. And additionally, I've noticed that a lot of times you can start doing business with people just by interviewing with people. For you, you might be able to see that. I want to go into that right now with you. Just talking about Big Audacious Idea, the podcast. You, in the pre-interview, you mentioned to me before we started recording that it kind of deals with your business and it kind of doesn't. And I'd like to go there with you now.
Sure. Thanks for asking. So there's different ways to look at podcasting. One option can be, I just love it. It's a creative outlet. And so creative expression might lead to something. It might not. The next is, I am overtly, consciously, and intentionally utilizing this as a marketing mechanism. And then the third bucket is, I want to make money podcasting. There are similarities, but they're distinctly different. So if we're looking at, I want to make money and monetize the podcast, then think about business model, volume, downloads, degree of engagement, segment length, episode length, optimal listening demographics, ad placement, sponsors, and the rest. That's where my partner and Big Audacious Idea, Evergreen Podcasts, they're in the business of the enterprise of multiple podcasts, smart distribution, social promotion, and making money doing it. In the middle, back to your point about is it good for business, there is some work to be done for sure as a podcaster, maybe even a service provider, to help companies be subject matter experts versus pitching their product and service, demonstrating their subject matter expertise. And as you said so well, Adam, become an intrinsic next step to say, hey, maybe you can help us. That's not my intention, hasn't been my intention. I've been primarily in bucket number one with Big Audacious Idea. It's a blast to do. Now, that said, it's amazing what happens when you aren't necessarily forcing it. So the new endeavor called Is It Possible is about big questions. And this spring we'll be launching. And what I'm finding is very interesting is I'm getting inquiries about the show and being asked if someone could be on the show before we're even launched and distributed. So there's, you gain a reputation, you gain a certain knowledge out there and personality, and suddenly things start coming your way. And quite often, those folks are communications directors for a CEO of a company. Now, I grew up in sales. Our challenge always was to get to the decision maker and get to the C-suite and the CEO. And when the harder you tried, sometimes the worse that got. Here, I'm getting inquiries saying, would you speak with our CEO? I didn't intend for that to happen. I am not looking at that as some sort of, hey, this is an opportunity. But suddenly on my plate are connections and relationships that could lead to something someday. So it's good for the business, even if you don't try for it to be.
I agree with everything. That makes a lot of sense. So you're in bucket number one, meaning that the way that you want to make money through the podcast, or the main way with Big Audacious Idea, is this focus around making sure that its post-production is quality, that the content is quality, and giving space for an advertiser. Is that right?
So thanks for asking and clarifying there. Actually, in bucket number one, I'm speaking of a different animal, and not to get too self-righteous here, it's just a creative expression. It's really not about making money. It's not about ad placement. It's not even a business model. So I'm a podcaster that does it for the work. It's just enriching. I would miss it if I didn't do it. It's work, but it's the kind of work I love doing. And it's a creative expression. If it makes sense for business and it leads to some contact, you know, I do executive coaching and strategy consulting, great. If it helps with our reputation, my partner Sue and I have been in business for 20 years and we're more credible in the marketplace, that's collateral benefit. But that's not why I do it. I do it for the sheer love of doing it.
I like that. So you talked about concepts of podcasting, where it's going, and I may have cut you off before you got to go all the way there. So maybe we could jump back into the concepts of podcasts, where you think it's going. I love the part where we kind of harped on that podcasts are not oversaturated. Now is a really good time to start a podcast. But where do you think it's going? What's possible with podcasting? What should we be thinking of if we're planning on maybe starting a podcast right now?
So I hear two questions there. Where is it going, perhaps? And then what to do when starting? So I'll start with where it might be going. And, you know, I'm not a pundit on this, by the way. I'm just offering my relatively pedestrian opinion about this. But I think what's cool about podcasting is that it's not just about podcasting. I think it's about audio consumption. You know, when we think about it, a podcast is a mechanism. When we cast human voice and oral traditions carried through technology, that can be a podcast, that can be broadcast. It can be Clubhouse, which is emerging now with drop-in audio, where social converges with podcasting, where podcasting converges with broadcasting, where monologue is merging with and coexists with dialogue, where programming and perfection in production is also meeting organic and natural, even viral audio content. So where I think podcast is going, it's central to a movement in audio sharing, conversation, and engagement. And the more ubiquitous and doable it becomes, the more possible it becomes that there are multiple different iterations of the type of audio experience we share together. I know that's a bit kind of conceptual, maybe to the tangible here. So what do I do? How do I start if I'm interested? First thing is ask yourself why you're interested. not to interrogate yourself, but just understand what's the motivation. I would say, and might be a little biased here, if you're like, I'm going to make money doing podcasts, ask yourself that a couple different times, because the number of downloads, the amount of work you have to put into it, the distribution smarts you have to put into it, it's a business. It's not a creative expression. So ask yourself, if I want to make money doing podcasting, I've got to figure out how to be the top 1%, right? And that's fine. It's a different, again, a different animal. If you want to do it because you're curious, you want to get connected, you want to learn, you want to grow, one of the best pieces of advice I could give anybody is start. Just start. And it's more startable than ever before. 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, when we started doing remotes, before now everything's remote, we were using Skype and FaceTime and it was clunky and we had to worry about internet connections. Now we've got Zoom. I use Squadcast. We use Squadcast, which has pristine audio samples on both sides of the equation. Hard drive merges them in the magic cloud. So the technology in just 3 years has come so far along that if you just want to try it, try it. So start.
That's interesting because I completely agree with you. Number one, you said if you're trying to do it for business, then you know the only real option is to get in the top 1%. And I feel the exact same way. We do podcast launches for new podcasters and we have two options and that's it. If we know that you can make money with your podcast, then we push you toward doing the top 1% launch. And then we have a top 10% launch because it's either you're in the top 10% or you're lost in the noise. There's a lot of podcasters that start, they don't finish, they don't have great quality. And that bottom 90 percentile just doesn't really get any traction. So for us, I feel like a lot of the podcast launch consultants that are out there, I really feel like they're doing people a humongous disservice by just having a podcast. Because like you said, you might be able to express yourself. You might be able to be creative. You might be able to feel good about putting something out in the world. But the truth is, you're probably not going to have it going out to very many people. And you almost, in my opinion, may as well just record yourself on your iPhone and not publish it anywhere. So we do top 10%, and that's for most people, and top 1%, which if you know you can make, if you're a consultant like Craig or like what I do, then you want to make sure that you get a lot of listeners, a lot of downloads, a lot of ratings, a lot of reviews, a lot of people subscribing and sharing your show. You're going to be turning it into a your thought leadership platform. And I thought that was interesting because, Craig, you're the first person to say that it's important to have a top 1% podcast besides me. I don't know. This is probably one of your voodoo magic things where you do a lot of research on me just to be able to agree. I don't know. But I'm like, I've never heard anyone else care about that until I'm sitting here like professing it from the top of the mountain. I love hearing that you say the same thing.
So. Well, I certainly believe it coming into it. However, wink, wink, I did do my research. So the language of top 1% was borrowed from the material I know about you. So it's a combination, but it's not patronizing you. And I'm being very specific too. It's about the third bucket that we talked about earlier. It's about if this is going to be a business model, there's absolutely nothing wrong with, as a matter of fact, it's important not to defend tight metrics, volumes and clip levels, strategy and business model, ad sponsorship models. That's a business. And you've got to be top in business if you're making it a business. I'm not saying be sloppy in the first bucket. If the first bucket is it's a creative expression, or the one in the middle, which is I want to be more credible and it might be good for business, you still want to do a good job. But you don't have to worry about the obsession with downloads. It's just a different context. That's why I say, if you're going to get into it, why are you getting into it? What are you trying to achieve? And so like in my case, and I think you said it earlier, sometimes it's not the number, but it's the quality. The kinds of connections I make with hosts, guests and hosts are very special because of that intimacy that I referred to earlier. So it doesn't have to be tens of thousands of downloads to have a meaningful connection with someone through a recorded conversation. It has also been very interesting to me that I didn't expect. A collateral benefit of podcasting, especially through the pandemic, is I will use the term reconnection. So there are individuals with whom I've lost a little touch and I miss. And maybe we don't have a chance to just stop at the local pub. There have been more and more conversations. And even if they're electronic, I'm having because of the podcast. So it's very enriching from a networking standpoint. And that's a collateral benefit.
And you know, I'm impressed that how much due diligence you do. That interview with Eileen and Sayla, right?
Yes. Well, my pleasure. If I'm going to be host of an episode or have the honor to be a guest, you know, doing a little homework goes a long way. And sometimes preparation is being prepared to be unprepared. And I'm quoting William Shatner, who was interviewed recently. He said one of the things when he was being interviewed is to how do you prepare? And he said to the reporter, what if I told you I didn't prepare? And the reporter said, oh boy, that's going to mess up this interview. He said, not did I prepare. I asked you, what would you think if I didn't prepare? And he got the conversation off to a rocky start on purpose in order to create an energy with the host. And they had a great conversation from that point forward. So sometimes preparation isn't necessarily planning or anticipating, but I did want to know about you. And I'm glad I did.
Good stuff. So who do you serve and how do you serve them? I'm not just talking about your podcast right now. I know you have more than one business. If you could narrow it down to, I serve this person, this is how I do it. Call out your perfect target audience who's listening now, if you can.
Sure. Thanks. I appreciate the invitation. So there's two answers to the question. When it comes to the podcast, the demographic, the profile is different than our business. Podcast is and are people that enrich my life experience. When there's someone who's interested in the idea of an idea, we've talked about on Big Audacious Idea, the concept of life and death. We've talked about what is the value of money. That was with Seth Godin. What is money and what is human value? And I dropped Seth Godin because obviously a lot of people know Seth Godin, and he's just a gifted guy to have a conversation with. These kinds of experiences and connections have a lot to do, again, I repeat, with what I do and who we reach. So it's thinkers. What kind of money they make, I don't know, but they're people asking the big questions of life. They're hungry. They're philosophical. They want to do something important in the world. Now, from a business standpoint, Catalyst Strategies, CatStrat for short, because even I can't say Catalyst Strategies sometimes. It's a tongue twister, hard to type. And remember, cat-strat is easier. We help mid-sized companies stop and think. And that might sound cliche, but especially now, ironically, Zoom meeting to Zoom meeting to Zoom meeting to Zoom meeting. I interviewed a fellow for Is It Possible? His name's Lawrence Gonti. Here's a guy who makes the vials that the vaccine goes into before they go into your arm. Long story short, it's a combination hybrid of polymer and glass. And there's a reason why you want that blend. They've gone from 109 people to 550, one building to four, 10 million vials to 120 million vials in a matter of a few months. This guy's busy. But yet he took a time and the inquiry came this way to spend an hour talking through this magic. I said, Lawrence, what is it that this brings to you? How does this serve you? He said, Craig, and he almost like leaned through the camera. He's like, Craig, I need to reflect. I need a moment. This is a gift to me. This hour is an absolute gift. So this is where business and our business profile and the podcast listenership kind of converge. For business, we're looking for mid-sized companies, leaders of in the C-suite who just need to take a moment. And everyone's running so hard, taking that moment to stop, rethink, and strategize is lost in our society. We help companies do that. We do that through strategy, leadership, executive coaching. But I'm not here to pitch our business. That's the profile. And I guess, you know, you're helping me, Adam. I guess I'm realizing how much the podcast activities in our business do relate. I've been thinking them somewhat separate, but you're helping me see the connection.
Interesting. And I want to find out, because there's just so many people that listen to this podcast that they don't have their show yet, that they want to grow a show, they want to get a show, and money sometimes can be an object for most of us. And the equipment that I'm using is, you know, high quality. The equipment that you're using is high quality. If we have a listener who, as you said in the beginning, if you fit in this one bucket, just start, just get it out there. You need to. What about the equipment that they need to have? What about the logo? What about kind of that back end stuff that needs to happen in order for them to get their message out? What's kind of the minimum viable product, the minimum that they have to do to be able to really perform at a level that's going to get heard?
Got it. Thanks for asking. Well, first of all, there's guys like you that provide services for a reasonable budget. I looked at your pricing and, you know, you get people launched and maintained. So if your start is like, there's two types of costs. There's the cost of time, then there's the cost of money. If it's like, I just can't mess with this. I want to do it, but I want to be the host. I want to talk, but I don't want to be connecting cables. Then hire someone to help you. If you can make the money part, ooh, it's expensive. Well, just look at the payback. One client gained, paid for. The other type of cost is the real dollars and cents. Okay, so The good news there is that what was costlier not too long ago is less costly now. The bang for the buck is pretty striking. So from a mic standpoint, I've got two key mics, I've got the multiples, and we have some XLRs. For simplicity, I don't use an XLR. An XLR, for those that don't know, is the kind of the official tried and true professional mic connectivity. You need a soundboard and some other things to make those work. Doable, but it's a little bit more work. You can save that. USB mics now, they're not quite the same quality, but they're amazing anymore. So I've got a Samson that I love, G-Track Pro. This is made by Blue, a Yeti X. These are pretty good high-end USB mics. Simple, plug into your MacBook, you're off to the races. You can get away with $100, $120, $110. I don't make to judge what's a lot of money or a little money, but what you can get for $100, $120 today is pretty doggone good. The other thing, as I mentioned earlier, tools like Zoom, and we especially like for audio, Squadcast, or Zencastr, or a thing called Ringer, R-I-N-G-R, you're talking about services that are $9, $10, $15 a month. What do you get for that? Maybe not total pro quality, but you're able to sidestep internet connection problems and static. Local recordings on hard drives on each side. You literally hit a mix button. It's mixed up in the cloud. Pretty impressive quality. So 100 and some bucks for a mic, $10, $15 for recording platform. You're going to have to host. There is some money, but it's really doable. And I'm rambling here, but one thing that I think is really powerful are the things that aren't about the fun stuff. The microphones and the cameras and the mixing boards, it's all takes me back to my hi-fi days. You can get a lot of quality through some smart sound treatment. Throw yourself in a closet, keep all the coats in there, throw in a couple extra sweaters, wear a sombrero, and for $10, $20, $30, you can get some acoustic treatment. Glue it to the wall, shut the door. Creating an acoustically friendly space, turn HVAC off. If you're going to do video, get a cheap selfie light. I've got one, two, three in front of me now. They're each like $13.50. So it's really doable, way more doable than it was just a few years ago.
I guess share what I think I'm hearing is the get a mic, but it doesn't have to be $500. It could be $100. I even have a PDF if they go to growyourshow.com/PDF, where it's just four different levels of mics. So you can get a $20 one straight off of Amazon. Just click the link on the PDF and you can get a one that's $20. I liked how you were talking about the difference between XLR and USB mics. Now, USB mic will plug directly into the computer. It doesn't have as much interface capabilities of editing the sound before it goes across, but even still, these mics sound super, super good and you don't have to pay for one of these things. Anyway.
So now you've outpaced me completely. That just blew it. Now you're a whole other level.
Do you have one of the Rodecasters?
I don't, but I guess I will soon.
That's crickets.
Nice.
I'm just kidding. Well, right.
Have you ever heard of giving a plug here just because he's so fun? Talk about YouTube. You were talking earlier. There's a guy out there named Mike DeGaudio. I don't know if you've heard of him. His platform and show is Booth Junkies. He does monologues basically in a sound booth, and it's some of the most brilliant mic review stuff. And he's so entertaining, just a brilliant personality. And what's cool about it is he can take you up to the $500 mics and review it against the other. He also will teach you around, here's how you use the pop filter. Here's how you don't, hey, bring the mic to you. You don't go to the mic. Speak to an angle of the diaphragm. Know whether the diaphragm is forward facing or point. All these tips can make a lesser expensive mic really powerful. In my case, ideally when I'm in the sound booth, I'm more so here because I don't do audio. It's all audio. In this case, it's not perfect. You learn those techniques and you can do a lot with a little.
Yeah. And so XLR versus USB, and USB is great. And there's some mics that are coming out that have this software that you can kind of download from the internet once you buy the software, and or it'll work right when you plug it in, which can also help you change the tone to sound a little more manly or to sound a little, you know, a little bit more high pitch or whatever you're looking for.
I try to do high pitch because I'm so manly.
Yeah, do it.
I try to unmanly. So I don't know if I could do a high voice. It cracks. I'll work at that.
I like it. Wait. Okay.
Squeaky voice. Craig James, the podcast. Squeaky voice.
Perfect.
Anyway, sorry, I cut you off.
So as far as what we need to get started, you had a lot of really good ideas. I liked the Squadcast idea a lot. I haven't been using Squadcast or Riverside.fm up until today. And as Craig knows full well, we're using Zoom and Zoom.us or whatever it is. But there is a fee that I pay for Zoom, but it does oftentimes, hasn't on this episode so far, but it does oftentimes have one of us lag. Like my internet will lag or yours will lag and it'll make a bad sound quality. So something like Riverside.fm is kind of like Squadcast. It records video on one track locally, audio on one track locally for your guest. And it does the same thing with video and audio locally for you. And just like you said, it mixes it together after the interview.
Yeah.
It just goes to the cloud and it gives you a really good quality. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't used that yet. I'm using Zoom and sometimes Zoom drives me crazy. There's pros and cons, but I've been wanting to do Riverside. Here's the issue. The only reason why I don't do it, because I want everything to be completely automated for me. And with my Calendly link, I can push the Zoom in there and it is connected with my Calendly is connected to Zoom and it propagates brand new link, a unique Zoom link. And I like the ease of not having to give multiple different people the same link where all of a sudden I do a whole bunch of interviews on a Wednesday, for example, and people keep pinging in the middle of I'm interviewing Craig, but John's on here early. You know, John's like just testing his, making sure it all works. And he jumps in and I need that unique link. And so I've been actually willing so far to suffer some sound quality or internet issues because I need the ease of being able to have 8 podcasts back to back on every Wednesday without having my team stress about it.
Got it. Yeah. Back to doing it, starting it, and being able to continue to do it. You know, a couple words of advice. If you're starting, get some episodes in the can, as they say, versus putting yourself under pressure. Oh my God, I have to record, edit, distribute every week. And it becomes a burden. You want it to be a joy, not a burden. Simple little tip here. Gosh, I forget that there is this wired thing. Ethernet, connect an Ethernet, grab an Ethernet cable for $10. And you don't have to worry that much. We're on our 5 gig network here, seems pretty good. But when I'm in the sound booth, I'm on Ethernet, hard connect, hardwired. A couple other things, because I know we don't have forever here. One thing I wanted to mention, even if you didn't ask, is to think about the customer being the audience and the customer being your guest. And there's a symbiosis between treating your guest and the audience as your customers. Meaning, one of the things I found and discovered is if you make it painfully easy for the guest to promote your episode, heck, they want to, first of all, make it easy for them. Here are the links. Here are the handles. Here's the embedded code. Here's the audiogram. Here's the link to the episode page in a kit. And you hand it to the guest. You might be surprised when you think, oh, I'm just starting and I don't have a network and I don't have a followership yet. Well, I'll tell you what, some of my guests, Seth Godin has a network. Don Tapscott has a network. A guy from Singularity University has a network. Peter Georgescu has a network. I'm not exploiting them. They want to promote it as bad as I do. Make it easy for them. So think about your guest as a customer that'll serve you and your audience well. Adam, may I ask you a question or two?
Yeah, let's do it.
So I'm interested in what we're experiencing right now, which is video and audio. And I do just audio. So I'd love to learn. I've got another question for you, but I'd love to learn your opinions on audio only versus what we're doing now. Pros, cons.
Perfect. Number one, I think if... For me, I feel like I connect better with you, and I feel like it's an easier time to produce a good episode if I can see you while we're recording. So regardless if I would use the video part of the episode, I feel like I can deliver a little bit better episode to the listener if I can see you during the interview. So I'm going to do it anyway. And in doing it anyway and spending an hour with you and working to pull out content and valuable information, it's going to benefit in the long run for marketability of the podcast if I can take that instead of just having an audiogram, make a videogram. And I could do, you know, a 17-second videogram. I could do a 1-minute videogram that they could share on Instagram or wherever else that they can post that. So I think having the video allows for better marketing. So I can take those clips. Additionally, most longer podcasts, if the podcast is somewhere between 30 and call it 2 hours, if a podcast is more than 30 minutes, most people are not going to want to watch a podcast from start to finish on YouTube, but some people do. And so you can slowly grow that audience, or you could take that same video and you can put it onto your Facebook. I call it, what is the word for it? Not organically, natively. So you can upload the video native to Facebook. So Facebook owns it and you're not having to have YouTube compete with Facebook, and you can get listeners that way as well. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I often do with the video is I push the video in through the Zoom. It'll allow me to import it to Facebook Live automatically. And what's kind of cool is when I started doing that with I sold my first show called Creative Real Estate Podcast. Mm-hmm. Before I sold that, I did a lot of Facebook Lives. In the beginning, I was only having like 20 downloads per episode, which was really disappointing because that was after a year of work. I was still, nobody listened to it. And so I was able to use Zoom and import it directly into Facebook and do a live. And because of that, I would have anywhere from 100 to maybe 700, usually about 300, 350, but anywhere from 100 to 700 people see that episode, at least part of that episode, where it counts on Facebook as a view, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. I would have only had 20. And because of that, it grew a lot. And I'll say the last piece between video and audio, because to me, having solid audio is important. At least having a decent microphone and headphones, like we're both wearing right now, because you don't want to get that sound back into the mic again. Hold on to it. But something that we started doing with our post-production services is for some of the people that have a longer episode, like it's 30 minutes or more, we'll take out a 5-minute clip or a 2-minute clip or 7-minute clip where it's just epic. And we'll take that and pull it into YouTube by itself. Since a lot of people don't want to watch the whole thing, it can at least add a lot of value and at the end have a call to action. If you like this content, listen to the entire episode on iTunes. Go to Apple, Stitcher, wherever you listen, and listen to the entire episode and have a call to action where they felt like they got a whole bunch of value. They're going to watch it because I'll tell you honestly, with YouTube, sometimes I'm not a huge YouTube watcher, but when I am a YouTube watcher, I try to only find short episodes because I don't want to be watching all night. So I see a 20-minute, I'm like, too much. But I see a 5-minute, I'm like, yeah, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
But the ridiculous thing real fast is I'll watch like 25-minute episodes and be 3 hours later. And I'm like, how am I still watching 5-minute episodes? So that's what our goal is. When we extract like a shorter piece is to help put you in front of that person. Go ahead.
No, thank you. That was of genuine interest because I'm still exploring and constantly looking at what makes the most sense. One thing you mentioned though, whether audio or video is what you hope to have consumed by listenership. I think that notion of building a rapport through video is so important. So back to Squadcast, for example, I always enable video, even though we only record audio. That connection and chemistry is so important. You did a great job, Adam, during our sort of warm up to get some rapport going. You know, we just met, basically. So, you know, the energy and the chemistry sometimes is difficult to establish, and the video helps with that. Quick story, one of my absolute favorite episodes, and it was consumed well, is a fellow named Grant Marquette. He's an entrepreneur and he studies entrepreneurship. He and I have known each other for 20 years. Before this next wave of Big Audacious Idea and his being a guest on it, I was just playing around with him last May, a year ago, and we were just kind of experimenting and having fun. Then we officially recorded for the show. Guess which recording we used? The first one. When we were just kind of winging it. And our energy, I've already had comments coming inbound saying, there's something special when you and Grant were chatting. This is before we even launched season 2 and 3. We were just talking, which leads to my second question for you. The idea of organic versus scripted. There's a balance, I think, that podcasters strive to strike. You know, you could write every word and read it, or you can just kind of go with the flow or something in between. I was interested in your thoughts and approaches from script to organic.
And so I'm dyslexic. I can't read very well. I'm slow to read, and I'll mix up letters and think it's a totally different word sometimes. So scripting out would be near impossible for me. And I have noticed a lot of people that have scripts. It sounds terrible, in my opinion, because they, number one, when they script it out, they say you are instead of you're. They say I am instead of I'm. But when they normally talk, they don't talk that way. So if you're going to script it, I think there's a couple of things to think about. You want to be conscious of your speech pattern. You want to be conscious of sometimes when we're really actually talking in real life, some of what we say, we brush through it, we breeze through it pretty quickly. And some of what we say, we pause and take a breath and emphasize. But when we're reading, for the most part, most people, they just read and there's no change in the cadence. So it doesn't sound natural. It doesn't come across natural. It sounds like you're cutting out a whole bunch of stuff. And so for the most part, I like to put a couple of ideas out that I want to talk about. And I just try to hit them and have a natural conversation around it. And there's pros and cons because I'll say or more frequently than if I don't do it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like the listener can really feel like they're talking with me instead of me talking at them. So I stand on the side of not scripting.
I tend to agree with you. I think that there's a happy medium and a balance to strike. The Evergreen team, Evergreen Podcasts, and the Big Audacious Idea Project, we evolve through iterations of how much to script and how much to let it go. And there's a young fella, Will Pritz, who's producer on the show and a brilliant sound guy and thinker. And he and I came up with a cadence that was perfect. There's an organicness in the middle, armed by a full briefing for the guest, though. And you do a great job of that, Adam, by the way, expectation setting and timing and reminders. Great job. That helps put the guest at ease. But then you let it go with a couple pillars of conversation. We'd strike maybe three pillars of conversation. So we have points to hit, but not script. However, the bookends of a well short scripted attention getter slash intro and a quick summary outro. I mean, we're talking maybe 30 seconds each, maybe a minute. Those have gone a long way to help give a sense of production and construct without constraining the organic nature of the conversation.
Love it. All right. It is time to say goodbye, my friend. So what is the best way for the listener to find you and get a hold of you?
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. You know, email, good old fashioned email works at cjames@cat-strat.com. Twitter handle, cjamescatstrat. Our website is cat-strat.com. LinkedIn, Facebook, you'll find me. Craig,
cool.
Craig Arthur James from Cleveland, Ohio. Adam, it's been a real treat being here.
Thank you for jumping on and for all the value. I really appreciate you jumping in and I look forward to connecting more.
Look forward to it. All right. Thanks.
You know, I really don't say this nearly enough. I don't mention this and I feel horrible because it's a great resource for you to be able to take your podcast to the next level. And it's simply a free resource that I don't need your email or anything. It's just a podcasting course that I created that is ended up putting in the very first 6 episodes of this podcast. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely going to want to just check out those first 6 episodes, see how they can help you improve your podcast, get in front of more people, and have a better result where you're making more money through the podcast, etc. So much can happen after you listen through episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So if you haven't done it, go do it now. And by the way, if you're subscribed, you'll keep hearing more great content. So to those of you who are, I'll see you on the next episode.